Chapter 22, Shootout on Main Street. I should back up and explain that I had no intention of facing down a gunslinger on Main Street. I may do dumb stuff, but walking down Main Street with a revolver loaded with blanks to face someone with an actual loaded weapon is completely idiotic. Basically, I was on a simple recon mission. Scope out the situation, report back the size of the opposing forces, get a feel for how bad things were. That was my plan. I pulled the hat low over my brow to keep the wind from snatching it. That's what cowboys do in almost every Old West movie when they are going out to meet the bad guy. Strike an intimidating pose. Here is another thing that happens in Westerns when the good guy strolls into town to confront the bad guy. The townspeople rush to watch. And that's exactly what happened. Sort of. Here is another thing that happened. The town had come alive. Gas street lamps flickered, casting an amber hue against the backdrop of buildings. Faces peered out at me from behind the windows of the Silver Mine Mercantile. Figures stood in doorways of the Stagecoach Inn restaurant, one with a hand raised as if waving to me. On the balcony of the Red Dog Saloon, three women wearing heavy overcoats flashed bare legs from the knees down. If I hadn't known the Ghost Town theme park was abandoned, I might have mistaken the plastic mannequins for stage actresses playing their parts. That's how real the fake people looked. Thing is, and I'm sure you already wondered about this, someone had to have strategically positioned the plastic people. My gut tightened into a double knot. Far beyond a darkened alley, a fiddle and banjo played. On the opposite side of Main Street, from inside the Last Dollar Saloon, a piano banged out Camptown Races. With ears alert, eyes wide, I strolled past the land office of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe at Law. My boot spurs clanked. Chaps strapped across my jeans jingled. Freshly placed bales of hay propped open barn doors at the Old Bones livery stable. Though the snowstorm had begun to move on, a brisk wind sent flakes from roofs swirling about. Weird how some New Year's Day traditions go terribly wrong. At that very moment, Wendy and I should have been in our cramped apartment listening to Dad complain about terrible officiating, and Mom grumbling about how no one appreciated her New Year's cooking. Instead, my sister cowered in the church of an abandoned Old West theme park while I walked up Main Street with dummies waving to me. I might have smiled at how idiotic I looked in my cowboy overcoat and hat, had I not been totally terrified.
"Well, isn't this a rare honor? So glad of you to join me, Nicholas!"
Heart racing, I whipped around. Under the boardwalk overhang, a mannequin dressed in black pants, black shirt, and black leather vest leaned against a porch support, his back to me. In a moment of terrifying clarity, I realized it wasn't a mannequin at all.
"You knew, I always felt those articles you wrote on the Cool Ghoul site were missing a real monster, evil incarnate. Hence our need to meet again."
Quickly, I scanned the street. No sign of movement or more men sneaking up to shoot me from behind.
"Make-believe has such a strong appeal, don't you think?"
Aussie accent with a hint of cowboy twang. Dr. Edwards called me Nicholas. Blue Shorts Mark had never spoken my name. The phantom cowboy examined the tip of the stick he whittled.
"Theme parks and gaming and virtual reality? The fantasies we create in our minds promise an escape from the drudgery of living."
With the blade of his knife, the phantom figure shaved the stick.
"Tell me, Nicholas, what is it you hope to gain by these murders you investigate? Notoriety? Justice for the victims? Are you that naive?"
I found my voice, quivering though it was.
"Shout out? Preferably?" "Ah, yes, the typos on the handbill. I wondered if you would catch the irony."
He paused from his carving.
"Your friend Kit, is she safe in that church?"
Kat was nowhere near safe in the church. None of them were. Before Annie had gone back inside, I had made her promise they would run to get help. By now, the girls would be through the hole in the fence.
"Your hesitation betrays you. No doubt, you are picturing Kat and your sister and the others rushing across the parking lot and down the road. You will be disappointed to know that I sealed the hole in the fence after your three friends arrived. This is where it ends, Nicholas."
The double knot in my gut tightened.
"Do you know why you exist? Why any of us exists? The world is a place of plenty, a world where every need is taken care of, except one. Meaning, there was a time when people would come to this ghost town from all over. And for what? To be a little scared, a little thrilled, enjoy some sweet snow cones on a hot day. They would arrive and take a family picture in front of that locomotive, or in the spot where you are now standing. Then they would go home happy, pleased for the momentary diversion. Tell me, Nicholas, do you believe there is an afterlife? The direction of the conversation did not leave me encouraged. There is a deeper meaning to life. Something we are meant to learn. Something more than hate and vengeance and the poor excuse we call justice. He paused once more to inspect the stupid stick he was carving. Tell me, Nicholas, is there anything you could do that would cause your parents to turn on you? Abandon you to a life of horror and death? I'm not sure. He turned his head and fixed his gaze on me. When I was about your age, I stole a candy bar from a sidewalk vendor. My father beat me, refused to speak to me for weeks. Once a boy knows he lost his father's love, his respect, something inside him shifts. He called me a bad seed. Strange as it may seem, I honored my father by proving him right. Tell me, if you killed a man, would your parents still love you, visit you in prison? No way was I going to risk answering that one. I hoped they would, but lately Mom and Dad had seemed pretty upset with me. In a blur of movement, he dropped the stick and drew his revolver. Blam! Snowy dirt exploded between my oversized cowboy boots. Answer the question, Nicholas. I don't know. Not good enough. Blam. The slug nailed me on the left thigh. Let's just say, if you have never been shot in the leg, you have no idea how much it hurts. Imagine someone hitting your leg with a baseball bat. Now, double the pain. Thing was, when I looked down, there was no blood spurting from between my fingers. No bone showing. Still, my thigh hurt like the dickens. Slowly, he strolled into Main Street. This is it, I thought. This is where he kills me. That boatyard where you work. Have you ever slapped a mosquito and killed it? I paused from massaging my thigh. Sure. Did you feel remorse? Consider how the family of the victim felt. Of course not. You think an insect cannot feel pain? Its family does not mourn for their dead? Right then did not seem like the best time to consider the feelings of a family of mosquitoes. Or any time, really. Your answers will need to come quicker, Nicholas. Blam. The slug banged me in the chest, knocking me back several steps. Wincing, I clutched my shirt, expecting warm wetness to soak my palm. None came. Blam! Another round nailed me in the right shoulder, whipping me around. Would you like to kill me? Blam! The slug nailed me between my shoulder blades. Feel the rush of adrenaline that comes with taking a man's life? Blam! Back of my left thigh. You think because you have not killed a man, you are different from me. You are not. All you need is the proper motivation. He was right. I wanted him dead. Whoever him was. But with my upper and lower body beginning to feel like a paintball dummy, I took the only option left. I ran back to the church.